horsey, horsey. Come on. Hey, horsey, horsey. Come on. That's a good boy. Who's a good boy there? Who's a good horse there? Who's a good horse? Do you want a carrot and some sugar? Yeah, and then I'd be petting its mane, and I'd be like, you're so pretty. You're the prettiest horse.
Commanderin!
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on the topics you want us to focus on, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Mm. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderinMTG and talk to us there, Facebook, etc., and we'll list all of that at the end. This week, we have an amazing show lined up for you. We have a special guest. We have the community's tutor, the literary lecturer, the titan of the tube, the professor from the Talarian Community College.
Why, howdy! I didn't see y'all there over by the scour glass. careful not to knock into it. Hoo-wee! That caused some trouble.
Makes a real mess when it goes over.
Oh, boy, do it ever.
Wow, thank you for joining us, Professor.
A pleasure to be here.
I've always wanted to ask if, in your videos, are you actually displaying your playmats and the like on a cinnamon table?
A cinnamon table?
Like, yes, they make such things.
It's a table. It was found at a thrift store by me.
Excellent.
For $20 or so. And then I broke my back trying to get it back to the house. Not literally broke my back, but it's very mm-hmm. heavy. I have no idea what it's made out of.
Was it a gypsy kind of thrift store?
Well, they did disappear after I made the purchase, and all these strange happenstance started happening. Curses, you might say. And ironic. They were very ironic. They were things like where I wanted this promotion at work, and then all of a sudden, after purchasing the desk and filling in the application on that desk, I got the promotion. But then it turns out the job is a lot more work than I had in mind. I went to return the desk, but it disappeared, and it was just a KFC. It was just a KFC with cursed chicken. Ironically cursed chicken. Ironically delicious cursed chicken.
Oh, you'll buy my chicken. Right, I presume the woman at the... I presume you thought the woman at the thrift store was simply cosplaying as Marquesa the Black Rose.
I don't know who that person is in real life, and I don't think that person knows who that card is, but it is possible that it was a cosplay, but I very much doubt that the strange, mysterious person was into Magic the Gathering enough to cosplay as that legendary creature.
Professor, we have, I'm certain, the majority of our listeners know who you are and watch your YouTube videos and subscribe to them already. However, I suspect one person has just subscribed to our podcast who does not know all of that information. We'd hate for him or her to really kind of miss out. Would you mind explaining both your channel and the impetus for your channel? That fancy word for reason for being on your channel.
Why, certainly. I have a YouTube channel called Talarian Community College. Many people mistake us with the academy at Talaria, the Talarian Academy. Mm-hmm. We're not them. We're not as fancy as them. They, of course, are the home of some of the finest wizards in the multiverse, led by one of the greatest planeswalkers, Urza, in fighting the Phyrexian menace. We mostly review card sleeves and deck boxes and do introductory lessons to formats like Commander and Pauper and Legacy. And we do have a foosball table in the cafeteria. So, you know, I a lot of people say we're a lot worse than the Academy, but I think the foosball table really brings us up to their level. And we're going to find where that ball went. It rolled off and we can't find it. And when we do, we can play foosball again. But anyway, YouTube channel, introductory lessons on Magic the Gathering, primarily kind of known for my product reviews, although that wasn't fully the intent of the channel, but I have reviewed, I do not think it's an exaggeration to say, nearly every product that you can find at your local game store, and many that are not there. I would be shocked if there was any type of kind of majorly produced product for Magic the Gathering in terms of card sleeves, deck boxes, or other accessories, like the sort of thing that is not a specialty item but is produced in such a number that most game stores have it, I've reviewed it and given a rather critical evaluation of it, whether I like it and why, or whether I hate it and why. And that's a very useful thing that many of our viewers find. So you can come on over to YouTube at Tolarian Community College and listen to me drone on and on about cardboard and cardboard accessories. Also, we do deck techs, which I wanted to call deck lectures, but no one understood.
Too many syllables.
Yeah, they were just like, deck lec? What? I'm like, yeah, lecture, because it's a college. Oh, you mean a tech? Well, it's not really a tech in that it's very basic. Like, I like to give templates, but yeah, okay, it's a tech.
Let's go back to something you said a few minutes ago about fighting the Phyrexian menace.
Yeah, no, we don't do that, and we don't have that capability here. They're really strong, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, right? As a resident Phyrexian, you could say
you're Dimir.
Well, yes, I am Dimir. But if Phyrexia got onto Ravnica, let's be honest, we know where the butt would be, you know, spread for the Phyrexians. It would certainly be in the glorious halls of House Dimir. But okay, as a Phyrexian sympathizer, we are strong and resistance is futile. Trademark Gene Roddenberry. Carry on.
Was there a question? What?
Huh? No.
Wait. What?
We're just talking nonsense.
I've been inspired by you a couple of times to purchase supplies. In particular, I got onto Dragon Shields because last year you rated them pretty highly, and I just mm-hmm. didn't feel that the KMC Pro Ultra
the KMC Ultra Pros with their max protection line Legion sleeves.
Yes, yeah. Of Legion sleeves.
Yeah,
it was the KMC yes. Pro Mats. But I decided not to go that route, and I went with Dragon Shields. And then mm-hmm. more recently, I actually bought the Zip Folios.
Ah, yes. Do you like them?
Ultimate
Guard, yes.
I like them, except one small issue. They're actually sized to hold a fully sleeved card.
As they should be.
Yes. And it wasn't clear. And so I spent the entire car ride to GP Las Vegas putting cards in the sleeves, and of course I had them double-sleeved. I mean, I'm not some kind of barbarian, right?
I would hope not.
And so they were in their inner sleeves, and I'd put them in, and they would just slide out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just... That was my only complaint.
User error.
It was user error, but it doesn't say anywhere on the plastic that it needs to be fully sleeved.
I hadn't noticed that. If I had noticed that, I would have emphasized that in my review. I pretty much sleeve up double-sleeved cards and put them double-sleeved into the portfolios and binders that I own. That way, when I want to pull out cards, like, for example, if I've got a deck of mine and I want to take some cards out and swap some cards in, it's already sleeved up. And if I want to change them from decks, yes. It's the same color sleeve so that I don't have to be constantly re-sleeving cards. So for people who already have their cards sleeved and don't unsleeve them, when they take them out of their decks, that is the right size for that.
Right.
But I see what you mean. That would definitely be frustrating.
Yeah, except in extremis, once I sleeve a card and it's double sleeved, it never comes out of either sleeve.
What about when the outer sleeve eventually gets dirty or deteriorates, which after a certain amount of time, they must all do?
Yeah, I find that if you spin on them and just polish it, it's all right.
Well, so Phil rarely actually plays paper magic, so...
I would hope so. I would hope he rarely plays it if he's spitting on his cards. Remind me not to play with one of his decks if I'm ever in the area and do not have one of my own.
Yeah, because I'm not shy. If I see somebody else's sleeve all scuffed up, I'm not shy about maybe picking it up, even licking it and kind of rubbing it on a playmat to get it nice and clean.
Does that mark it as your own, like if a dog licks something?
Usually.
Oh, look at this Mox Ruby.
Hey, so we're coming up on a great milestone for the Tolarian Community College, aren't we? It's 2 years of Tularean Community College.
We actually came up on it a week or two ago. Yep.
No.
It's all kind of time is all kind of happening around us. So
it's wibbly wobbly.
It's most people think of it as a linear progression of cause and effect. But you know, I think coming up upon or having just come up upon are close enough sentences to be equally true.
Yes.
Not really, but I'm just trying to be nice to you.
Well, I was born in the future, and I'm actually aging backwards.
No, like Benjamin Button.
And Mork.
Yes, and Mork.
Hang on. Shouldn't we be singing Happy
Birthday? 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be.
You'd have to pay the royalties. No, it's 260 year old women still own the copyright. How are they still alive? Yeah. They just literally drink the money.
They're liches.
Your old moths will. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They've been perfected.
With that much money, you can figure out a way.
So that's right. With every song, they can live longer. So will you be having more Commander content this year?
Why, yes. It's funny you should ask that question completely randomly. Like you did, because as it happens, as of the time of us recording this podcast, which I assume will be probably, weeks, a couple months before you edit it and get it uploaded.
You're familiar with our work.
That's usually the timeline for you folks, right? Every couple of months? Right.
He's spoken to Josh.
Yes, but I do have another Commander episode coming out literally tomorrow, Thursday morning, in which I will be doing a deck lecture on the Sen Triplets, one of my favorite Commanders. And for the longest time, I swear. Now, it's very hard to talk about Commanders in terms of underplayed because we all exist in our own little niches and communities, and maybe nobody in my group ever even has heard of this one Commander, and then I speak to you and everybody over there is playing it. But I had always had a very strong impression up until recently that the Sen Triplets were highly underplayed compared to some other commanders, either some Azurius commanders that were you typically like Augustine, you know, like as a if you're going to play control, that's just, you know, death, or Shroom, you know, for artifacts and stuff like that. But recently, such as when I mentioned to you before the podcast that the lecture was on Sen Triplets and everyone, you know, oohed and awed pleasurably, I've felt that it has become a much more popular commander. So I don't know. I don't know what your impression is on that, if this is a very well-known popular commander or just a secret treasure or somewhere in between.
Sean has a Sen Triplets deck, and I use her as a backup commander in my Mariecki deck.
Yeah.
Mariecki Reburi.
Is that how it's pronounced? Mariecki?
I don't know how it's pronounced. I pronounce it Mareberry.
Marika.
So
Marika.
I run Sen Triplets.
I don't know.
In an Esper Artificer deck. And
that's Artificer for American listeners.
What language do you Americans speak? Remind me, Phil? I love Sen Triplets. It's a weird deck in that it doesn't look like it's doing a lot until eventually you've turned the screw enough and your opponent goes, oh, I'm screwed. Oh, ironically, yeah, because you've turned the screw. But I like it a lot. You have to be... It's a skill-intensive deck, I find.
Yes. Well, it depends how you build it. You can build it so many... I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that our lists were dramatically different because... I don't know about your impression. I'm curious to hear this, but I've always felt that the Sen Triplets, while they have an amazing and unique ability, it isn't really something – it's not a build-around-me commander, right? That's fair for me to say, right? Because it's not like I'm putting a lot in the deck that interacts with its ability to look at and play other people's cards, right?
Well, or, I'll ask, I've never how do you use the card Political Trickery in that deck?
Well, I just use the card political trickery because I want. I have a kind of a subset of suboptimal cards that are more there for fun and table politics than for just creating the most ultimate badass, kick-ass, powerful commander deck that will annoy everybody and make it so that I am no longer invited to Commander Night. So in wanting to try and have a little bit of fun with the deck, I put in cards that can be used for inspiring conversation, interactions of a amusing nature. I love political trickery just in terms of flavor of the card. It can be a lot of fun when someone has a land that is critical to them in some way, as is often the case, and you swap it out
take
for something
the, take their shrine to
worthless.
But I'll take your cowbell coffers for the planes.
So yeah, I 100% agree, Professor. There have been games where I've played with my triplets deck where I've literally never cast it, or there have been times where I've cast it just to draw out spot removal, so I know that the removal that's in someone's hand is going to get dragged out, so I can then cast something else there and be safer in casting it. She's definitely one of them commanders where the deck doesn't revolve around her. People really hate being mind-locked by her, though. It's weird. They still get to see their cards being used.
So do you use Lattice so that you can get...
Yes.
Colors or do you? I'm a Celestial Dawn man myself. I prefer Celestial Dawn because the Lattice can actually help my opponents out by allowing them mana fixing, since all players get affected by it. But with the Celestial Dawn, I get the mana fixing. I get to cast their red and green spells as well, but they see no benefit.
So I run Lattice and Celestial Dawn, but I use the Lattice as part of a indestructible shroud lock with Darksteel Forge. So my deck's much more an artifact themed thing, so it's all about sneaking out powerful artifacts. So you use the Lattice to make everything, all your permanents, indestructible, and then just constantly wipe the board. That's one of the control wins in the deck. So Darksteel Forge, Microsynth Lattice, something like Angelic Arbiter. There's numerous guys that make all your artifacts untargetable. And then when you get another Illinois disc on the table at that point, you just go, have fun playing permanents, guys.
Right.
You just need to hold the counter spells back for the inevitable Cyclonic Rift that's going to be coming. That's how I play it anyway. So it is a control strategy, and that's why the Lattice is in the deck. Lattice is a spendy card, though, for dollar pounds.
Yes.
I don't know if it's a modern thing or something, but yeah, it's not cheap. There you go. Something's expensive. What do we blame, guys? We blame modern.
Right.
Yeah, that brings to mind one of our listener questions, actually. Let me scroll down to that for a minute.
So, right, Mario Tellez.
Yes, go on.
Yeah, so Mario Tellez, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Mario, asks on Facebook, Professor, want to play modern sometime?
Sure.
Would you like... That was his entire question. There you go, Mario.
Yeah, I would like to play Modern sometime. Modern is one of my favorite formats, so I do like Commander, too. But I'm very happy to play Modern. Well, and you can watch me play Modern on Twitch on my streams.
When did you get into Commander?
I got into Commander, right around the time I think the first pre-con decks came out. So what was that, 2012, 2011?
11.
I didn't get into it through buying one of them. I wanted to build my own. And so I actually accidentally built a Highlander deck instead of a Elder Dragon Highlander deck because my friend and I, who got excited in talking with some people about Commander, didn't fully get all of the rules. And so what we got was 100 cards, no more than one of each except for basic lands. And so we went back and scoured through our collections and ended up building two Highlander decks and then were quickly corrected the next day at the store, at which point we found appropriate legendary creatures to make as commander of those Highlander decks. My first ever commander deck, therefore, as many people's is, was goblins. Because goblins is why.
Yay.
Because goblins is why. You know, just throw a bunch of goblins and mountains together. And yeah, that's something. It sure is. And so that was my first commander deck. And then when I built one from not just the scraps of goblin bodies littering my binders, I've got binders of goblins, when I actually like sat down and did some research and in no way looked at any articles or net decking or anything like that, which would have helped me make a much more effective deck, of course, I put together a vampire tribal commander deck with Anowin, the rune sage, as my commander. And you know what? I know that there are strictly better commanders in Mono Black that could take his place, such as Shieldred, but he's got some spunk, Anowin, and I do like my Vampire Tribal. I still have that deck. It's got a special place in my heart.
Hey, who is your Goblins commander?
Yeah. My Goblins commander was Krenko,
yes!
And I was quickly forbidden from ever using that deck again.
So, Phil, he's used one of my commanders and one of Nate's commanders. Let's see if he uses one of yours. Do you feel all left out?
No, not at all. Mine are very difficult to run.
Well, then I definitely don't run them. What I need is just turn the cards sideways and swing.
Oh, I'll say that the Talarian Community College is better than the Talarian Academy because the Talarian Academy is not allowed to play Commander.
Oh, that's there you true. Go. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
All they do is draft over there and standard.
Draft. I'll tell you something that you've got over the Talarian Academy as well, is I'm presuming the Talarian Community College isn't a sunken ruins.
Well, so full disclosure, we have been described as a sunken ruins on many occasions, but you know, that's just because we live in a colorful neighborhood. We're at Talaria East, actually, which is right across the street from the mall with all the outlet stores, where like all the surplus coats that have irregularities with them and can't be sold at the mall at Talaria, you know, West. The fancy mall over there. So they send the irregular coats and stuff over to this mall. And across the street, there is the Talarian Community College, which has often been mistaken for a sunken ruins, but that's just because we need to get the parking lot repaved. And we're having a special. We're having a special right now with every student enrollment. We will notarize 3 items for that student because... All of our professors are also licensed notaries, which is actually where most of the money comes from, is notary jobs on the side.
I was going to say, they have to make a living somehow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many of them because, are also bail bondsmen?
Only those that are tenured.
Any bounty hunters?
That's what my next question was going to be.
No, I'm afraid that none of us have the physique for that. We're all rather rotund, portly ladies and gentlemen at the community college. It's all the mall food, because we eat at the food court.
Sure.
Well, jetpack like, and usually, wrist rockets, it doesn't matter how portly you are.
Yeah, yeah. We do not hunt bounties.
Oh, hang on, my cat's throwing up. Go ahead, keep talking.
Hey! That's what he thinks of your podcast.
So if cat spew were a card, it would be a sorcery, right? Cat spew? Yeah, that's sure what it would sound like.
Yeah, pretty much that.
Yeah.
Ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum.
Yeah.
That's in the next Unset Uneaten.
Oh.
If Nate's cat's anything like my cat, it will spew up and then quickly re-eat
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't want any of the other cats in the neighborhood to get it.
My cat will vomit in front of my feet and then look at me as if to say, "You clean it up."
I imagine you right. do clean it up.
Yeah, right in the eye.
Yeah, yeah. So some of our listeners in the earlier episodes reported that while listening to the show, they would get funny looks from their spouses because of all the laughter coming from the speakers. And so just be warned, there will be some laughter.
Okay, I'm back.
all right. So, Professor.
Yes.
We have a segment that we bring on to a couple of, you know, onto the show once in a while.
Now, was that the extent of the Q&A session? Was one person saying do you want to play modern? And now we're already moving on to the next segment.
No, well, so, no.
We're going to do a Q&A segment. I saw you like practically spamming Twitter with like, make sure to submit your questions.
You do spam.
That's
a lot.
It. Just one.
Just
yeah.
one.
Just one. Yeah. Will, do you want to play modern sometime? All right. No, go along. Listen, go along. Forget I said anything.
I wouldn't say I was practically spamming Twitter.
Our listener submitted his question. I mean, what more do you want?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And we he has earned his $5 this week.
And actually, I'm pleased he asked a relevant question in a Commander podcast. Do you want to play modern?
Right. Right.
Actually, listener Ona J. Rever T., from the EDH subreddit was the one who wanted to know who your first general was. And the EDH subreddit sort of argued and, as they are wont to do, said, no, it was Anawan. So it's good to hear that it was Cranko, then Anawan.
Yes, well, now they might have said Anawan because keep in mind that the Cranko deck was originally constructed as a 100-card singleton like Highlander deck. So technically, it's kind of a gray area. I Anawan was the first commander deck that I really built from scratch up. And then there was a 100-card Highlander deck I threw together and eventually just pulled Cranko out of and said he's my commander. So it's kind of a gray area. I don't want anyone who is arguing that it was Anawan to feel like they were wrong in their professor knowledge. Also, it's interesting that people know that because I don't remember saying that before. But I guess I did.
I think you said it on Command Zone.
Sure, that seems plausible.
Yeah, I do vaguely remember you talking about it before. Wow. You might have been with Wedge somewhere. I remember Wedge being involved in the conversation.
Ona J. Rever T., I think he or she mentioned that they got that information by peering through your windows.
Right.
Going through his garbage.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of yours, and also you're out of toothpaste.
I've noticed you're a little behind on your electricity payments, Professor.
That person also asks, which is your most liked general / deck currently?
Ooh, it's so hard to, you know, say favorites, you know, like that, like most liked. If I had to pick one, gosh, for a long time it was my Tesa Orzhov Scion deck, which is a combo deck. And so if I had to save only one, I also really like my Sapling of Kul'Thanar deck. That is there's an underrated general for you. That's a fun deck to play.
Yeah, it is.
If I had to save a deck, like if you said to me I had to get rid of all my commander decks and I could only save one to play forever, maybe I'd do this. It would either be the Sapling or Tesa or the Sen triplets. The Sen triplets have so much versatility is the thing. Maybe as of now, the Sen triplets, but they're on my mind because I've been working on the Sen triplets deck for the last couple weeks. And it's like, wow, this is a cool deck that I have. I need to play it more. It's been at the bottom of my drawer for a little bit. Time to bring it up. Been playing too much Sapling. So to answer your question, yes. Yes. I it's so hard to name favorites. I have so much love to give. I love all of my commanders. I definitely say those are the top three, but I also have a soft spot for my Anawan deck, which I should totally do a video on now that I think of it. And I really want to, you know, build a few others. So, yeah.
Okay. Quick question to Nate and Phil. Just the name of the card. No debate. Favorite commander? Phil?
Marath.
Nate?
Jaleba.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay.
So I was just interested.
Yeah. No, I don't play Marath a lot because I've played it a lot and it's a very controlling and can be sometimes a very brutal and unfair deck.
Brutal and unfair is what we strive for in this format, isn't it?
It is what some of us strive for, Mr. Demir.
You know the answer to that question for me. So Lazav. Yeah, it is Lazav, yeah. Right.
So, Professor.
Yes.
We have this segment we occasionally include in the show called The Watch List.
The Watch List.
Yes, I say that somewhat dramatically because we have a stinger that comes out and it stings people. I don't know why I did that. In The Watch List, we typically talk about cards that have a somewhat focusing effect on one's meta, certainly on one's game. Cards like Nate actually has the list memorized because he's building a deck with all of them.
Bribery, doubling season, prophet of Krufix, consecrated sphinx, and Deadeye Navigator.
Right.
Wow.
So yeah, so these are cards that you look at and you're like, and when you see them played and when you see them played well, you wonder, why hasn't Sheldon and the rest of the rules committee banned this card yet?
Hmm.
But this week we wanted to change it up a little bit, and instead of having featuring a card that warps the meta, we would feature a product that warps cards. And so, this week's watch list is Ultra Pro Pro Fit Sleeves.
Mm. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I know them well.
They aren't max protection sleeves. But yeah, so you know them well. What would you say about the Ultra Pro Pro Fit sleeves?
Well, the Ultra Pro Pro Fit sleeves do not fit like a pro, and that's for sure. They have recently redone them, but they still, I've tested out their new line, and they still don't fit properly. And so if you're going to be double sleeving, I urge you to use KMC perfect size sleeves.
Yep.
If your local store doesn't carry them, they're readily available on from every online seller, whichever one you choose and endorse. They have them. And so you can get them. You can get a hold of them. The Pro Fits, some of them fit. That could be like on the bottom of the packaging. It could be in quotes. And it could say, some of them fit. When I reviewed the Pro Fits, and I literally just sleeved up 20 cards, and that's about as far as it took before several of them were already, because they're too tight and they were like warping the card. They're pulling it in almost like it was a foil that was curling. And I said, this is unacceptable. I literally had some viewers post comments saying, well, yeah, sure, but then you just throw those away and keep going until you get the ones that fit. So what's the problem? Yeah. And I'm like, well, or you could buy the brand where they are actually a perfect size, fit very well, and you don't need to throw any of them away. In addition to that, the Ultra Pro Pro Fits are particularly thin. They're prone to splitting, which I've never once had happened to me sleeving up. I've sleeved up Commander decks up the wazoo, and I have that's hundreds upon hundreds of cards. I double sleeve, and I've never once had a KMC perfect size sleeve split as I pulled it over one of my cards. But with the Pro Fits, numerous ones will split. They're thin, they offer subpar protection, and they can even damage your card. I believe the grade I gave them was at best a D, probably worse though. I'd have to look up.
Yeah, and that fits with any product that runs a risk of damaging your cards gets a D at best.
At best.
Okay, so the question I would ask then is, why do LGSs stock this product if, A, it doesn't work? It literally doesn't do what it says it should do on the packet. And, B, better alternatives are available.
Many don't have a choice.
Yeah, so I don't know about this side of the trade.
I have a couple friends who own, you know, local game stores, and so I'm always really eager to hear all the behind the scenes stuff. And the problem is that for many of them, and I'm sure this varies certainly from area to area and most certainly from country to country, but at least here there is a like sign up with Ultra Pro where you can request certain items, but also where you are obligated to take in and display certain items. So if you're going to sell Ultra Pro products, they don't want you to say, oh, well, I don't carry your Pro Mat sleeves. It's like, no, you have to carry those. If you're selling our line, that's our star thing. And so they also are like, well, we are sending in this shipment, you know, 20 packs of the Pro Fits, and you pay for them in addition to other things. So that's why many stores have the products they do, is because they have to sign up for the lot. If they're going to carry Ultra Pro stuff, they have to carry Ultra Pro stuff.
And that sounds like a racket.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, why carry the Ultra Pro products at all? Are they really that popular? I mean, they fall apart compared to other sleeves. About the only thing they offer,
the playmats are okay.
It's exactly what I was getting to. It's the playmats are okay, and that's largely because they have Wizards branding on them.
Well, I've actually given some Ultra Pro products A's. For example, as a Commander player, I could not recommend to you more strongly the Ultra Pro Satin Tower.
That's a very good one.
The Ultra Pro Satin Tower is incredibly affordable. It's about $9.99. You can even get it for less at certain, you know, like if there's a sale or a surplus thing going on, a store's, you know, liquidating some inventory. But at Tops, it's $9.99. It's incredibly durable. If you drop it on the floor, if someone steps on your backpacks, you know, shoves your backpack in the overhead bin, the contents are safe. It has a bottom compartment that holds an ample supply of dice encounters, and it will hold slightly more than a double-sleeved commander deck. So just right. enough for a commander deck, and not many, but a few sleeved-up tokens, perhaps, or other surplus, you know, cards that you want to put in there. I can't think of a better product for that accomplishes that. And that's a solid A from me for Ultra Pro. When people say to me, what deck box should I get? That's one of the first I recommend. I can recommend $100 handcrafted, custom-made wooden deck boxes, or I can recommend a $9.99 Ultra Pro Satin Tower that is one of the finest products on the market. You know, really the top. And there are plenty of Ultra Pro products, let's be honest, mostly their deck boxes, that have received grades in the B range from me and so forth. And while I've given the outer sleeves, their matte and pro matte and sleeves, C grades because they deteriorate and they split frequently, many people like the shuffle feel. Many people do not find splitting sleeves of one and a couple to be that problematic for a really good shuffle feel. In the past, they were one of the most affordable sleeves. And so even though I'm going to not be a fan of them and such, I'm still going to say that they're satisfactory, but nothing more. And other people, they're one of the most popular sleeves just because of those facts. So, you know, not everything Ultra Pro makes damages and destroys your cards or falls apart completely, but a lot of it does. A lot of it does. They've got really crazy quality control or something over there. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I was the first one in my paper meta last year to buy the Satin Tower, and it's excellent. It's just a little bit too large, but I did switch to the Ultra Pro Dual. What is it? The Ultra Pro Dual deck boxes, the ones that are intended to hold 2 60 card decks, but I put a commander deck in there.
Oh, well, you should also check out then the, not to be confused with the Ultra Pro Pro Deck Box, not to be confused with the Ultra Pro Pro Dual Box. Boy, they sure like using the words Ultra and Pro in their product titles. It's incredibly confusing, but the Ultra Pro Pro Deck Box will hold a double-sleeved commander deck plus significant room for tokens, and it's literally just it's a lot smaller and more compact than the Pro Duel. It's a single unit. They're incredibly cheap. You can usually get them for a couple of bucks, three, maybe $3-4. They come in solid colors. They recently released a line of them with popular legendary creatures like Progenitus on them. They're incredibly durable. There you go. And they're incredibly durable. They've got a snap top lid. I mean, it's nothing too fancy. If I crunched it up in my hand, I could break it without a deck in it, but it's also $3. And when you've got 16 commander decks, as many of us have, it's a great place to store them in. That's another one I strongly recommend.
Now, can you break them up because they're flimsy or because of your superhuman strength?
Neither. I can break them up because all things are breakable. I do not have superhuman strength. I sometimes pull a muscle standing up. But,
well, how do you discipline students at your college?
I read their essays back to them straight-faced. I had a student get very upset with me for doing that once, where I was literally just, I said, okay, so let's just take a look at this. And I began reading it back to her, and it was just horrendous. It was written like a second grader, and this is a college classroom, and she said that I was making it sound like she was an incompetent writer. And I said, I'm reading your essay back to you. If it sounds that way, there's a reason beyond the fact that I was putting no inflection on anything. I was literally just reading it back to her and asking a few questions.
You're presenting evidence.
In front of other students?
No, not in front of other students. I wouldn't do that. It was during office hours. It was a one-on-one office hours meeting.
Being an incompetent writer never hurt Dan Brown or E.L. James. So, you know, it's not the end of the world, is it?
Right. That is true.
So, do you ever hear from companies like... I rewatched your Max Protection video. Or like Ultra Pro after this.
Now, Max Protection has much, much worse record than Ultra Pro.
Absolutely.
I don't think I've found a Max Protection product above the C-minus range. I think like they had a couple, it's a box, and it's like, okay, it's a deck box. There you go. I guess that's a C. But beyond that, most of their products fall apart. Boy, I bought their flip box, like those fake leather flip boxes. Everybody makes one. I'm not a big fan of them in general, but some people love them, so I've reviewed them, of course. And I've opened up Ultra Pros, I've opened up Ultimate Guards, I've opened up every company's. And I got the Max Protection one. I opened it up, and it smelled like someone was burning tires in my office. This odor came up, and I had to say it in the video where there was a stench about this thing. It was already falling apart out of the box when I purchased it brand new. The cards didn't, if I recall correctly, even properly fit, like they had to get scrunched up a bit to go in. I mean, it was just a disaster. But the smell, it was just horrendous. So yeah, Max, like, people think I have a vendetta against Ultra Pro, but I don't. I just call it like I see it. And like, when they sell a $90 cardboard box to Cube players, and it's a box of cardboard, and I say, and it's $90, and I show that it's cardboard, and I kind of bend and rip up the cardboard easily, because it's just regular cardboard, that's not me with a vendetta, that's me just reading their essay back to them, you know?
So do they ever contact you and say, hey, bleep,
not
why are
bleep,
you bad-mouthing our product?
I've heard from them. I've heard from them. It took a while. They didn't write me back for a while, but they claimed that it was they said that they had a bad communication system previously. I've chatted
like
with them. Yeah. I've even gotten them to say, like, you know, I mean, and another thing is like, maybe not with the products that I give a fail or a D to, but you know, so like with the Ultra Pro regular Pro Mat sleeves that I'm not a fan of, but someone else sees it and they like it. Think of like a movie critic, like, you know, my mother maybe would go see every movie that Roger Ebert gave a thumbs down to because she's like, I don't like his taste. And so I know that if he hated it, I'd love it. And if he loved it, I'd hate it. And so she still sees clips from the movie on his program. She still hears his evaluation and knows that she disagrees with him. And so she still tunes in and watches every week. And there's still an advantage to a movie that is going to get a thumbs down from Roger Ebert to send that film to him to be viewed. And so I tried to explain that to everybody, but especially Ultra Pro, where it's like, look, no one has to agree with me. I'm showing the product. I'm filming it from every angle. I'm putting it under some stress tests. I'm offering my evaluation. And they maybe didn't even know it existed until recently. And so they don't have to agree with me. But you also maybe want to consider making something other than cardboard for $90. But, you know, that's your business. You know, I've never heard from Max Protection. A guy who worked for Max Protection came up to me at GP Vegas and said he loved me and stuff like that. And said he would love to, like, create a link between us. But never heard back from him. So I don't know.
Well, you already have a link, don't you?
Then he watched your videos and went, oh,
right,
shit.
Right.
In the interest of honesty, every single card I own is double-sleeved in a KMC perfect size inner sleeve and a purple Ultra Pro Pro Mat outer.
All right. You should try the KMC Hyper Mats. They are really, really superior,
yes,
I feel, to the Ultra Pro Mats, especially
for
double-sleeving.
Do they come in purple?
Yes, they come in purple. I know that's important. They also protect your cards and have a good and provide an ease of shuffling. But I do know that those factors are below. Are they available in purple? Yes, they are available.
It genuinely
in purple.
Is for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I use purple joking. Dragon shields. Pretty funny.
Oh, Phil,
do you,
we're going to get cards.
Have you tried? Have you tried the matte dragon shields that recently came out yet?
I have not. I didn't even know that existed.
Oh well, obviously you're not watching my program. The matte dragon shields have come out, and most dragon shield fanatics are rather fond of them. And I've heard many a dragon shield diehard fan say that they are no longer going to be using the glossies and only using the mattes.
Mm.
Wow.
I might do that, so, but I have many, many cards I would need to resleeve.
Ah, well, you can just check them out.
Yeah.
I think that probably concludes our conversation on why you shouldn't use Ultra Pro Pro Fit in the sleeves.
Yes, yes, and why they are on the watch list.
Yes.
I watched the professor's video on inner sleeves because I wish I had before I bought any because it would have saved me like £10.
Yeah, it would have.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, do you want to ask that question from Rob Glesny?
Do you ever... Boop.
Which breed?
Which breed of shark's teeth makes the best +1/+1 counters?
The kind that aren't endangered.
I feel sad.
Now the kind that are no longer attached to the shark.
I like to use the endangered ones because it makes me feel special. I like a real man.
Yeah, you are demure. And that's Rob at RoboGlez.
I think that'd be more of a gruel trait than demure, right? Like top of the food chain.
He just presumes that us demures are evil.
They are.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got a scene for you. Okay, Professor?
Okay.
So I want you to imagine yourself. I want you to imagine yourself. You've just picked up your copy of From the Vault Angels.
Ah.
You sit down in your soft, overstuffed professor's chair.
Yes.
And open the magnetic seal.
Yes.
Remove the plastic insert.
Yes.
Open it and then pull the first tear strip on the pack.
Yep.
You reach for sleeves.
Yep.
What do you grab?
KMC Perfect Fits.
Sure. And then?
And then KMC Hypermats.
KMC Hypermats. Got it. So you're a KMC guy through and through.
More or less. As far as double sleeving is concerned, for me, that has been the best combination. The Hypermat sleeves do not have the indestructibility that I might want, but the real ease of shuffling with them, I had one viewer describe them to be like butter. Like the butter. They're just so smooth and silky, and they were engineered to be a perfect fit with the perfect size sleeves. And so as someone who has sat down and been pushing double-sleeved cards into, well, dragon shields, and right. had it literally push the sleeve off just a little bit, but unacceptable, of course, and had to then go back and redo it, with the KMC Hypermats, it just slides right in.
It boop, really
boop,
does.
Boop. You know, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And so when I do get my From the Vault Angels and I do open it, the first thing I do is put those foils into KMC Perfect Size and then place that into KMC Hypermats. People ask, what sleeve do you use personally out of all the ones that you've given good grades to? And I use KMC Hypermats for double sleeving. For single sleeving, I'm a big fan of the Legion Illustrated double mats. These are the most indestructible. I would challenge anybody out there to buy the Illustrated, and it has to be the Illustrated Legion double mats. The ones they have like the Quoth the Raven Nevermore on the back, etc., etc. Those are the most indestructible sleeves on the market, more so even than Dragon Shields. I challenge you to try ripping that apart, and you will probably get it eventually, but it will be the hardest time you have ever had with a sleeve. There's footage of me literally turning red pulling one of those in one of my videos. The only problem with them, and the only reason is that they're tight. Now, for a single sleever, that's great. They're a real tight fit, but unfortunately, they're too tight for double sleeving effectively. You can make it happen, but you really shouldn't. It's an awkward fit. It leaves an opening kind of at the top for dusting. You should not double sleeve with them. I know they're working on trying to keep that indestructibility while at the same time making it a better fit for double sleeving. They're not there yet, but I know many people say to me, Professor, you lunatic, I don't double sleeve, and I want a sleeve that doesn't split. To which I say, go get those Legion Illustrated double mats. There's not a stronger sleeve on the market that I've ever found. And they're cheap, too.
So for Josh Lee Kwai, who is famous for his derision of double-sleeving cards. You recommend these Legion
They've got a pretty good... He says he likes the hyper-mat shuffle feel, which is fair. They've got a really nice shuffle feel, too, because they're double-mat, and so they've got a smooth feel. I will agree with him that hyper-mats have the best shuffle feel.
They do.
But, you know, he could give it a try. Why not?
Yeah.
But an important question, are they purple?
Well, they have pictures on it.
Yeah, so not going to work for me.
Yeah.
Unless those are pictures of purple.
Right.
Yeah, maybe purple berries or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You could write them and ask them for a portrait of purple.
Sean, you have a very important question, don't you?
I do. Professor, I was wondering if I could apply for the position of counselor at the Tolarian Community College, and failing that, I would accept janitor.
Sure. Both get paid in packs of cards. So,
Sweet. That's more than I get paid for doing this podcast.
Don't tell him that, Professor.
No, we do pay in packs of cards, but they're Kaijudo cards.
Oh, as a background check, he's both an admitted Demure and Slytherin.
That's Slytherin. True. Well, I'm Slytherin.
All right,
well,
then,
brother.
Yeah,
I'm old Slytherin. Old boys network forming here, I can see.
Well, many people, you know, Slytherin has a really bad rap. Do you know Gryffindor has had its host of dark wizards as well? And did you know that Merlin was in Slytherin? So
Yes, he was.
He was. Slytherin has a very bad rap, you know, and so I am absolutely in Slytherin.
I'm a massive Potter nerd, by the way.
As am I.
Massive.
The movies butchered that literature. Did you know that the fifth book can be interpreted as a condemnation of Blair and Bush's War on Terror?
Yeah, that's an interesting reading. We should talk about this another time, though.
Okay.
What commander do you think J.K. Rowling would field?
Let me ask you this, because she's Hufflepuff. So what is a hardworking, solid commander, possibly loyal, but underrated too? Like, people would maybe not think twice about it, but not realize how much strength it has just in terms of the work it does on the field. That's the commander she plays.
Doran.
Well, Nate, I was going to say Nate as the resident Hufflepuff. It's up to you to answer this.
Damn it. I'm a Ravenclaw.
He's a Ravenclaw, goddamn it.
As demonstrated many times, but I think she would be Doran the Siege Tower, if by that description.
That's a good one. I also think Brian Stoutarm.
I think she might be a Runetail Kitsune Ascendant.
Hmm.
Mono white though.
But it's loyal. It encompasses everything. It helps you out. It supports your team.
Yeah, but your team is mono white.
I think this is a great question to have your viewers answer in the comments, which would be, what one commander embodies each of the Harry Potter houses? So which one commander embodies Hufflepuff, which one commander embodies Slytherin, and so forth and so on.
Well, see, Harry Potter was able to forge an alliance between, you know, he forged a functional alliance between Gryffindor and Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff. So he has to be a commander that has access to all of those colors.
I think you'll find in the books, the Slytherins join in on the side of Potter and the Dumbledore's army during the Battle for Hogwarts. They're not all just led off to the dungeons by McGonagall in some sort of hate crime.
Yeah, that was really weird, because they're like children, and it's like, that was really upsetting to me. That was really upsetting to me.
I was annoyed by that at the cinema. I was genuine. I was like, what? That is so out of order.
Yeah.
McGonagall's just being a boop there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means that Sean is a prime candidate for the janitor position.
Oh, absolutely. We don't have janitors at the community college currently because we can't afford any custodial services, which is why we are often mistaken for a watery ruin. So the first order of business would be to fix the leak in the facilities so that water is no longer flowing out of our restrooms to such a large degree that we are mistaken for a watery ruin.
And Sean, well, of course, is the first person you would trust to take care of your discarded documents and trash.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a bit Golgari now. Anyway, moving on. Next question.
Yeah, this one has a typo in it. Sean, why don't you read it, since you'll read that typo correctly.
Okay. Who is your favorite Doctor Who villain, and which magic card/race would best represent them?
This is not your typical interview.
My favorite Doctor Who villain is the Master.
Yes.
I think Derek Jacobi's portrayal of him was fantastic.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I never really thought about the Master as a magic card. The Doctor is easy. It's obviously Teferi. But who would the Master be in the magic universe? Well, if we're going to go off of the idea of a planeswalker, maybe...
Obnixilis?
I'm gonna say that's possible. He's a little like... a little bit of a warmonger for warmonger's sake. And I think the Master is much more along Nicol Bolas's lines, you know, in terms of like scheming for personal power. And the Master's brilliant, you know. Obnixilis is like wants to slice your head off with a sword, you know, sort of thing. But the Master is much more of a mental marksman, at least when portrayed correctly. Again, I do not follow the current iteration of the saga, but when portrayed correctly is absolutely, you know, he's the Doctor's opposite. In fact, they called him the Master initially, not for the premise of Master, like control you Master, but simply because they wanted another academic title, such as Doctor, that can be given, and so they went with Master.
The Master is now currently a mistress in the
Yes, yes. Well, I
she's
have
not
no
bad.
Yeah, she's not bad. I have my problems with the current iteration are not in their portrayal of the Master. They're in their portrayal of the Doctor. But that's a whole other podcast. Although I will say that while I have no problem whatsoever with them regenerating the Master nor into a different gender anything like that, it was sad that they did not bring Sims in to show the regeneration, which I think is a real loss, because I think John Sim did an amazing job as the Master as well. He's no Derek Jacobi, but he did a great job in the Last of the Time Lords trilogy, showing the kind of, he was the evil David Tennant, which was just so great, because that was when he regenerated from Derek Jacobi. He was thinking of David Tennant's Doctor, and he was emulating him, and so he had became not just young, as he had said verbally, but also kind of had that manic Tennantism. And you know, John Sim was absolutely emulating that you know aspect of the character, and I thought that was just a brilliant portrayal. He was the evil David Tennant, which is what the Master is, the evil Doctor. So yeah.
So you don't watch the new ones at all?
I had to stop watching them. Them portraying the Doctor as nasty and morally questionable and someone who you can't trust is so fundamentally against the character. And I'm not at all opposed to them showing the Doctor as dark or having pain or lying about some things. But at its core, Doctor Who is not about science. It's about morality. It's about hope. It's about love.
That's right.
And those pursuits being superior to cynicism and greed and brute force. And so when they are showing the Doctor abandoning, you know, his friends, when they are showing him, like, God, when I stopped watching was at the finale where she's throwing the TARDIS keys in the lava, and it's the most hurtful, unpleasant scene of just misery. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, Doctor Who is who you smile at. Doctor Who is who you want to hug. Doctor Who is who he hops in the room. Watch David Tennant's entrance when he comes out of the TARDIS and he's just like, did you miss me? And it's just like, everyone cheers. That's the Doctor, you know, not this bastard of like, you know, didn't we learn the lesson with Colin Baker? I thought we learned this lesson with Colin Baker, but no, evidently not. And I have full respect, by the way, for Peter Capaldi as an actor. And I also think he would make an amazing Doctor. I wish they would give him a true Doctor Who character to play and not this abomination of morality that I can no longer stomach.
Capaldi is a Whovian himself, though.
I know. And, so how is he allowing this stuff to fly? How is he? Can he not wrestle control? The cutest thing in the world is typing into YouTube Peter Capaldi Doctor Who fan letter, because they found it. He wrote fan letter when he was a kid, and they found it. It's adorable.
Give him time. Anyway, moving on. Magic.
So you're okay with David Tennant and Matt Smith, but not Eccleston or Capaldi?
What? Eccleston, he's my favorite doctor.
Eccleston?
Eccleston is the greatest doctor.
But he was supremely nasty.
No, he wasn't. Not at all. That's completely false. He was not nasty. He was brooding and emotionally wrapped in the events of the Time War. He was in no way nasty, at all nasty, and that is such a false impression of that character. He was absolutely the Doctor. He had comedic moments. He had joy. He was always fighting for what was right. He was always going to come back for you. He was always going to save you. He was always someone you could trust, and he made a lot of jokes. And when he was ecstatic and joyful, he was a doctor who felt that he had committed mass murder and had given up on life, on himself. Capaldi's doctor has given up on us. Eccleston's doctor was one who looked in the mirror and didn't know why he kept going on so much. And it was that series where he rediscovered his love of life and his love of being the doctor, and at the end fittingly impressioned on his companion and was regenerated as David Tennant's much more approachable doctor. But Eccleston is probably my favorite doctor in terms of character and acting. And I love David Tennant, and I love Matt Smith as well. I love them all. But I would say that absolutely Eccleston's doctor, he's the misunderstood one by audiences. They're looking at his outfit. They are not looking deeper. They're seeing a nasty old big black leather jacket, and they're going, oh, he's mean. He's the mean doctor. I challenge anyone who says he's the mean doctor to rewatch things like The Empty Child two-parter and stuff. He's not the mean doctor. He is absolutely vying for everyone. Oh my God! No, I'm getting emotional over this because he's not. That's so unfair to say about him,
Professor. I think you need to sit down, sip from your mint julep, or whatever it is they drink at the Tolarian Community College.
Blessed
you
wine.
You get back in your time hole, son.
I think two out of three of the regular commander and hosts will agree that this is your Slytherin bias coming out.
Slytherin superiority, more like.
So, I don't know who asked this, but which Ravnican guild do you join and why?
Well, so I did say, I have said this before, like, I love, on a flavor level, is it? I love it. They're the mad scientists ruled by a dragon. Come on. Yeah. It's like, it's not even, because I always loved mad scientists as a kid. I wanted to be an inventor at one point when I was young, like wild inventor, like inventions that do crazy things and stuff. And that's the is it in a way. They're just wild, mad inventors on a magical plane. So it's like, let's see if we can put magical blue magic in this red magic artifact thing and fire it at somebody and see what happens. It's really cool. But not just that, but they're leader is a giant genius dragon, and Niv-Mizzet is terrifyingly powerful, but not even a little because of his size and physical strength, and that's what seals the deal for me. No one ever goes, oh my God, Niv-Mizzet is the biggest, baddest, you know, dragon around. They're like, he's a genius. He's smarter than everyone combined. He was smarter than all the other dragons which he had executed on Ravnica. He's the only dragon on Ravnica. All those other little dragon type creatures you see are actually clones of him, which has been explained in the storyline, and they're actually de-evolved versions that he's just playing around with in experiments. There are no other true dragons on Ravnica other than Niv-Mizzet, and he is a genius, terrifyingly so. So yeah, that's the guild that I have like a real draw to. But if magic were real, if we're being honest with ourselves and looking ourselves in the mirror and being honest, I would probably be some mid-level bureaucrat in the Azurius guild with the most pointless job in the world, and I'd be sitting at my desk signing off on the permits for someone to go have lunch sitting at the bench by the fountain, and I'd be looking at the window at all these is it guild mages running by with lightning shooting out of their gauntlets and stuff, and I'd go, oh, you know, and then I'd eat my cucumber sandwich for lunch and just be sad.
Brilliant.
That's excellent. Hey, Sean, you have this question.
Okay, yeah. So do you have any deck building quirks? For example, I always put at least one Spanish card in all my decks because a nod to my Spanish heritage. Also, on a similar note, do you have any pet cards?
Yes. I guess that my deck building quirks are that, well, I do like to match up lands with the theme of the deck, if possible. This is much more relevant in Commander than, like, Modern. But in Commander, for example, all of my basic lands in my Taysa deck are Ravnica, Plains, and Swamps, because it's on Ravnica. My Sen Triplets deck, all of the Islands and Plains and Swamps are from Esper. And my God, isn't that some gorgeous artwork? So I guess that my quirk...
the Esper is beautiful.
I guess that my quirk would be art involved, that I really love the art of Magic, and if possible for the deck, I let the art, you know, guide me on in terms of card choices, not in terms of like, well, I'm going to play Red Elemental Blast in this Legacy deck because I love that it's, you know, Richard Thomas art or whatever like that, but rather that if there's like a lot of choices, for example, I will almost always go for the original art, things like that. That's definitely a quirk of mine. And by the way, as far as Spanish language is concerned, that's my favorite foreign language my favorite non-English, I should say, language for a card to be in. Is Spanish, because it's the most unpopular one for most people.
It's weird, isn't it?
I don't understand.
I have a Spanish great grandmother, so and the rest of my family is all sort of Irish sort of bloodlines and stuff. So we're all ginger haired, blue eyed, and then once every generation, there's someone comes out with my colouring, which is sort of super dark on everything. And Spanish language, they're fun to read. Erebos de Dios de Muertes.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I love
beautiful.
It.
Yeah, and
Soren, Lord of Innistrad, is Senor Soren de Innistrad, which is amazing. Senor Soren, I love it.
Zurgo aplasta craneos. That's my Spanish card. Nicholas Jaragoski, friend of the show, he has earned that title. He says, hi, Professor.
Hi.
First, I would like to thank you for your contributions to the Magic community.
You're welcome, Nicholas. Anything else?
No, that's all. Move along.
Yeah, move along. Proud Patreon supporter here.
Wow, thank you for that, especially.
You helped guide me to KMC double sleeving and satin towers for my cards.
Snap.
Along with inspiring me to try new formats, mono red pauper.
Cool.
Not to mention my sweet TCC playmat.
Awesome.
Now on to business.
Oh.
His question, in other words.
Okay. Hit me up with it, Nick.
Many Magic players ask the question, which planeswalker do you trust to save you from a dark and inhospitable plane, and why?
Teferi, because he's the Doctor Who of Magic. And he would, and because if you look at his character history, he is all about saving people and stuff, Teferi. Teferi. I would trust Teferi out of all of them.
Would he not get you caught in a temporal loop, though?
Well, but that's very Doctor Who-ish as well, but he would be...
True.
He'd get me caught in it. It's like the whole thing where he shifted the entire continent at a time in order to save it, and then it turns out, uh-oh, it's going to come crashing back through time into this other continent, and he's like, I kind of did this. I didn't mean to. I was trying to save everybody. I mean, it's so you could interpose that with Christopher Eccleston on Station 9 saying, like, I caused this future when I removed the Jagrafess. I mean, it's just they link up so perfectly. But and he gave his spark to seal the time rifts. Yeah, I would trust Teferi out of all that lot to be the most likely that if we had any connection or contact, that he would be the one that would most likely save me from an inhospitable plane.
And would you trust Eccleston as the best representation of the Doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. Eccleston would be the most likely to save me. Okay, so here's also showing your own prejudice. Out of Matt Smith, David Tennant, and Christopher Eccleston, the one most likely to save you actually is Christopher Eccleston, because both David Tennant and Matt Smith's tenures have numerous examples of where they had to leave people behind and accepted that about themselves. But Christopher Eccleston couldn't accept that in any of those moments, of which there are numerous ones I could cite, where he absolutely wailed and railed and screamed against the idea of doing something like that. Whereas even Matt Smith literally left his companion from an alternate timeline to die after a lifetime of misery because he couldn't save her and her younger version and stuff. And so, yeah, absolutely, Eccleston. And that's what I mean. People are not need to look deeper. Look closer. Rewatch the episodes.
So I'm Professor, stuck mentally in the image of Christopher Eccleston playing Teferi like Robert Downey Jr. playing a black guy in Tropic Thunder.
I don't think that for Christopher Eccleston to play Teferi, I don't believe that Teferi's defining characteristic is the color of his skin, and so an actor portraying
just
him...
Just in the movie.
Yeah.
No. Just...
Professor, it still isn't really clear to me who your favorite Doctor Who is.
Well, there is no Doctor Who. The character's name is the Doctor.
The Doctor, yes. Yeah. Is this Nate's question? You're sure you're stuck in Phyrexia. The gate has closed, and you're truly stuck.
We just, I know.
Yeah. And so then, which Doctor Who do you wish turns up to save you, and why? Eccleston.
Eccleston would be the most likely one to come to Phyrexia to save me. Matt Smith and David Tennant would be like, you can't go there.
What house would you say Matt Smith is in?
Matt Smith can't even go to 1969 to save Amy and Rory. Give me a freaking break. How can he not go to 1969? Oh, we can't go to 1969 New York. All right, go to 1969 England and have them take a plane out there. Oh, you can't do that. Can't go to 1969 on Earth at all. What about 1970, 1971, 1972? Go to England in 1972 and have them take a plane out there. That is absolute baloney. He's not trying hard enough.
Perhaps he's
just baloney. I hated how they got rid of them. They should have exited in the God Complex. That was Amy and Rory's proper exit as companions. I refuse to accept the Angels Take Manhattan as canon.
Yeah.
I have many opinions about this, all of them strong.
So would you say that Matt Smith is Hufflepuff?
He's a Gryffindor, surely.
No, I would actually say Ravenclaw, because Matt Smith is the professor version of the Doctor. He is the eccentric professor, isn't he? Bumbling and stumbling as he leads the lesson and trips over his own feet. Ooh. I love Matt Smith, by the way, to death. I just adored Matt Smith as the Doctor, and I loved that he was essentially an academic professor. I really saw a professorial, you know, like vibe from him. He was like, I heard a lot of people say, oh my God, he's like this lovable old history professor I used to have and such, and I adored that.
And so David Tennant is Gryffindor?
Yeah, David Tennant's Gryffindor, no question.
Phil, dare we ask the professor the sorting hat question and see if it aligns with his perception of himself?
Oh God.
Yes, why don't you ask it?
Okay, so professor.
Yes.
There are five possible answers for this question, and they will determine your house or whether you're a muggle or not.
Okay.
So you're on a quest, and you're traveling down a corridor in a dungeon, and unexpectedly, you come across a locked door. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Wait, I'm traveling down a corridor or a dungeon?
You're in a dungeon. You're traveling down a corridor in the dungeon.
Now, have I been placed there against my will, or am I exploring this dungeon?
It's your quest, so it's you're
exploring
it as part of
your quest. Well, but I think that the two make a very different... The two would dictate very different reactions. If someone has captured me and forced me into this dungeon, or if I have willingly entered it seeking something, that's a very different reaction. I just need to get it right.
You willingly go to Hogwarts, so let's say you're willingly on this quest.
Okay, so wait, I'm already at Hogwarts, and I'm in a dungeon
Hogwarts? No, I'm just saying, it's a tie entire way. So you're willingly on a quest.
But am I at Hogwarts? I'm not at Hogwarts.
You're not at Hogwarts. You don't know, you're not a wizard well in this question.
Well, you don't,
but I'm exploring a dungeon, and I'm not yet a wizard. This is but I am willingly in the dungeon, but I'm not a wizard, so I don't have any magical ability. Or do I have magical ability that I don't know about? There's a lot of unanswered questions to this whole scenario.
It's like you're a peer of Hermione or Harry or Ron.
So I am at Hogwarts.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's very important. So I am a wizard. Well,
you are a student of Hogwarts. Where you are, not so important.
Okay. So I'm a student of Hogwarts. Go on.
Let's say you don't have your wand as well.
All right.
You can cast spells.
You can cast spells without a wand with proper concentration.
You're on a
quest.
Yeah. You're on a quest to find your wand.
And I fear that the wand has been locked away in this dungeon. Obviously, I would need to open that door.
Yes.
Correct. But the door is locked.
Well, I would need to figure out a way. Perhaps I would start by trying my best to cast a magical spell despite the absence of my wand, because it can be done. And even if I fail, I'm no worse off than had I never tried at all.
It fails.
Right. Okay, that's true. You try the spell, it fails.
Right. I must figure out another way to open this locked door, for I must have my wand back.
Okay, that's true. The way you try and get through the door will determine what house you should really be in.
I attempt to pick the lock using any implements I may have on me or find nearby.
That's it.
That, sir, is the correct answer. Wow. You are a true Slytherin.
All right, cool. Yes, I'm also a rogue in D&D, apparently.
Yeah, so the five answers are, if you turn around and go back, don't even try and go through the door. You're a muggle. If you try and pick the lock, you're a Slytherin. If you try and break through the door, you're a Gryffindor. Like, with force, you're a Gryffindor. If you simply look for the key, you're a Ravenclaw. And if you knock on the door to see if anyone answers, you're a Hufflepuff.
All right. Woo, Slytherin, see?
Yeah.
We're clever. Slytherin, we're not as bad as you think. Slytherin.
That's our house motto in
Latin. We're not as bad as you think. Come on in and be famous.
Listener Rasha from the EDH subreddit asks, what do you think about Tuck?
For EDH. So when that first came out, the Tuck changes, I was against it, but I have since had it explained to me by many, many people as essentially beneficial, and I accept the changes now. So my position has changed from strongly against to lukewarm acceptance, borderline indifference.
I think that was the majority of the community's reaction.
Yeah.
Tutors, are they against the spirit of EDH?
They are, and I want to do a video at some point where I encourage players to attempt as a exercise within their playgroups to not utilize tutors in their decks, just to see what gameplay is like and what decks can still be successful. I think that a really interesting way to play Commander is tutorless, and that dramatically changes the nature of the game. And I do believe it is in a positive way, because with tutors, you are ensuring repeatable results, or at least encouraging that much more than you would otherwise have. And if you don't have any tutors, then what you need are multiple strategies that can happen. And it means that each game of EDH is much more different than the last.
Yes. Yes, I've been running mostly tutorless in some of my newer builds. Sean has been as well, which really means he's down to about five or six tutors.
Shut up. That might be partly true. Shut up.
Infinite combos, yay or nay?
In Commander specifically, or just
yes.
at all?
Yeah, this is an EDH question.
Okay, in EDH, infinite combos. I am yay, but not something that I... I do play Taysa, who does some infinite comboing. Mm-hmm. I'm all right with them.
All right.
I'm not crazy worked up about them like I might be. You're not going to get a Christopher Eccleston response from me about infinite combos.
I think there's a big difference between an infinite combo and a two-card infinite combo, and especially another layer onto that is a two-card infinite combo, one of which is your commander.
Right. And I also think that there's a big difference between building towards an infinite combo and comboing off turn two in EDH.
Yeah, I've seen a Micaeus the Unhallowed mono black deck, which basically sits there, tutors for a Triskelion, and says, I win.
Yeah, that's not fun. Yeah.
Super fun, guys. Well done. You fought long and hard about that. Well done.
Yeah. Agreed.
Woe Finder from the EDH subreddit asks, what is the most evil thing you have done in a game of Commander?
Oh, God. Thank God you said in a game of Commander, because I was like, I don't know that I should say that.
Basement full of dead hookers.
I mean,
That's his follow-on question. What's the most evil thing you have done? The
most evil thing? Probably played Taysa. You know, if you know how that deck works and what you do with it, with things like Darkest Hour and the combos that that deck creates, that's pretty damn evil.
Yeah, that's kind of rude.
Yeah. I guess, like, the popular response would be, I have a Sliver Commander deck. It was, I have a Sliver Overlord Commander deck, so I've played Slivers. That's pretty evil.
And on the MTA cast, you were talking about dismembering somebody.
Yeah, but you just said in EDH. Not that drifter
not
the
hitchhiker.
On the side of the road. Yeah.
Not the hitchhiker.
Yeah.
Mike Murphy.
Who hasn't got a basement full of dead hobos?
Right.
Mike Murphy at Gonzo's Papa. What, in the professor's opinion, are some of the best value cards, real dollar-wise?
Some of the best value cards. I suppose that I would say anything involving mana for Commander, be it lands or mana rocks or other accelerants, that it gets to a point where if you've got the components for the colors that you want to play in terms of mana, then the rest of the deck typically is not a problem. So I'm never a big fan of things like fetch lands in Commander. I don't really think that's necessary, or original dual lands or anything like that. But having, for example, a complete set of the Ravnica Signets, of the Alara Panoramas, of things of that nature, I think that that's a really neat Commander stockpile to put together. And of course, of all the appropriate mana rocks and such, so that you've always got that access to a viable mana base for the colors of the deck that you're building.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll buy 10 or 20 Signets just to have them.
Wow, 10 or 20?
Well, you know, one of each.
That's why I can't find any for sale. You've got them all.
I do. And even though I bought them for a quarter a piece, I'm happy to part with them at about 75 cents a piece.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah. You're a hero.
Sean has an opinion, right?
The best value card out there for dollar-wise is Dictate of Erebos. I used another expletive in the middle of that. But Dictate of Erebos is a functional reprint of a $9 card for 50 cents. I mean, God's sake. I mean, we spoke about it in the Jason Aul episode, I think.
Yeah.
Buy Dictate of Erebos, everyone. It's an amazing card.
So, Professor, I know that we only have you for a limited time. And we appreciate all of the time that you've spent with us. Believe me, this has been an absolute blast. I had at one point actual tears in my eyes. So we'll do a lightning round of questions where Nate and I will take our listener questions and just ask them rapid fire.
Okay. I'll try not to be so verbose.
Well, verbosity is your choice. I think it's been great so far, so I don't want to mess with the chemistry.
All right.
So, Mario, tell us, how is the YouTube life?
It is great. There is that less the less right. Loquacious?
That is YouTube? Quick fire.
Matt Longshot Doyle asks, what commanders would you recommend for a commander cube?
A commander cube? I don't know that I have recommendations on commanders for a commander cube. What commanders would you guys recommend for a commander cube? I don't have too much experience with commander cube. I mean, I know what it is, but I wouldn't feel qualified to recommend commanders for commander cube.
If you're trying to cover all the monocolors, I would pick a cycle of something like the five
the guild
Phyrexian
gates.
Praetors.
What about like each of the Ravnica guild leaders? Every Ravnica guild leader.
Ooh, good choice.
Is that, or are you just saying that?
No, I do think that's thematic as well. So cubes build around themes. So Ravnica would actually be a very nice setting for a themed commander cube, because you've got all those legendary creatures in there, plus you've got cards that work synergistically with each other. So that's a great suggestion.
Not just
a suggestion, it's a great suggestion.
Good idea, Professor. Professor's right. I agree with the professor. All right, guys, settle down. Yeah, all right.
The janitor agrees with the professor.
Yeah.
I'll get my mop.
Rob Glesny asks, okay, I'll get serious. Need the lowdown on the professor's hair. Are we talking mousse, gel, spray, such volume?
The answer might surprise you. I use no product whatsoever in my hair.
I knew it.
I can't. If I put so much as one little spritz of hairspray, one little dollop of mousse, one little squirt of gel, I get the most irritated scalp in the world, and I have dandruff for days. I cannot put any product in my hair, so it's all natural, as
have
they
you tried,
say.
Have you tried bacon grease?
Why would I try that?
Because you would smell like bacon.
No.
So I'm presuming you have a Robert Smith from The Cure style back combing regimen going on there.
Robert Smith?
From The Cure, yes.
From The Cure? I don't know what.
As a man, not au fait with 1980s goth pop.
was that a movie? I don't watch a lot of movies.
It's okay.
That is.
It's okay. Do you use aloe vera?
Just say yes.
Not in my hair, I don't.
Oh, well, why there's another option.
Yeah.
Aloe vera in your hair?
Yeah.
I mean, you're living in a fresh hell. I bombard my hair with product constantly. I wouldn't be able to live without pomade.
Charles Moreau, at Charles_Moore. Did your father understand what he was talking about in the old man rants by the end?
No. He claimed he did. The liar. Actually, he wasn't lying. Lying to himself, maybe. He was like, at the end of those videos, he was like, you know, I think I'm starting to understand. I feel like I can play a game. And I'm like, oh my God, you could not. Like, you do not understand one word of what you're saying. No, he did not understand. He is very, very old. He was born in 1934. He did not understand the words he was saying.
I sub-referenced your father when talking about damage on the stack in a recent episode. Yeah, it made me...
Julio El Patron, at Julio_DA.
Good name.
How do you build a 5-color mana base for, say, Horde of Notions?
What, like right now? Well, you get all the appropriate lands and stuff. I don't know. You're going to need a lot of cards. You're going to need, I don't know, the proper mana base for that, I'd say, would probably be 36 lands and 6 to 8 accelerants sort of thing. And you would need to utilize, I feel, I would, help and aid, such as things like EDH Rec and Tapped Out to see your ratios in lovely graph form,
right.
Look at other deck lists. You know, I think this is an excellent question in that I can use it to jump off into a tangent of a point that's related, which is that I don't feel that you can make these things in isolation. And I think that far too many people feel that the question is, hey, so if I'm doing 5-color, what do you put in that mana base? And my answer is, well, I don't know offhand. I would like to see what other people are putting in their mana bases. I would like to look at those numbers. I would like to try some things out. Obviously, you have the ratios memorized, like that you're going to want to run, you know, about 46 or so lands and accelerants combined sort of thing. But then the first question I would ask, having not built a 5-color commander, would be, is that ratio still accurate for a 5-color commander? And I would ask that at the EDH subreddit. I would ask that at the Tapped Out forums or the MTG Salvation forums. And I'd say, hey guys, so typically for 2-3 colors, that's what you're looking at. But what about 5? Do we want to up at any? Are there any things that we're looking at? Obviously, any mana rocks that aid in filtering are going to be crucial. The Lorwyn cycle of lands for filtering are going to be crucial. But you're engineering a fine piece of machinery. Picture the old man over a watch with the magnifying glass. And we're working with a very delicate system here to try and just, you know, do it in isolation, I feel, is a mistake. And I feel that using the tools of the community and that communal conversation is what we want to do. People often write me with like, hey, what do you think of this deck? And it's like, well, I think maybe we should take it down to the Reddit forums and have a conversation about it. Because there's no one answer necessarily, but rather the strength in a group analysis and response. And I feel that for Commander especially, that is true.
That is excellent, and we agree completely.
So you wouldn't advocate 7 of each basic land and a command tower, then?
I probably would not advocate that, no.
Would you play Guild Gates?
Yeah, I tend to like, there's some, it depends on the flavor of the commander. Well, first of all, the Scrylands are preferable to the Guild Gates, right?
Sure.
Second of all, there are other tap lands that have different flavor. Like, for example, Coastal Tower is one that I run in my Merfolk Commander deck over Azurius Guildgate because it's coastline. So there's flavor grounds for running that. Blue-white comes into play tapped over the Guildgate tapped. Would I run Guildgates in a five-color deck? Probably not so much. I'm actually a fan of the Vivid Lands. They're pretty nice for being able to take a counter off to give us a color of mana, and you got three of them, and your biggest problem is often early game, getting that mana to work so that you can actually do something early game, because once you get late game, assuming you survive, you've drawn a million cards and you've gotten the pieces that you need. So I'm often very concerned about early game, and so things that can help me out early game, even if they are limited, are often very big on my list.
Did you know, Professor, that there are still tens of thousands of Magic players who play Guildgates?
Yes.
It's terrifying and sad. Some of them don't even use the Tarkiran refuges.
Uh-huh. Does that one life it gains you really, really matter? It's hard for me to get worked up.
Why would it not
matter? Well, it matters, but hard for me to get worked up about it. I'm not a fan of the Guildgates. I'm not a fan of the Tarkir refuges either. The Scrylands better. If I don't like any of them coming in, you know, I don't like any of the lands coming in tapped just for two colors. I mean, but I don't feel it's a big problem. I feel Command Tower is a
scourge and
a
bane on our community.
No, Command Tower is a scourge and a bane on our community.
Ooh. Whoa, bold. Go there.
Ooh, controversial,
right,
sir.
Oh, all right. Well, let me ask you gentlemen a question. Do you think that Commander is a format where you should be able to build your own deck? Or do you think that the deck should be built for you by, say, Wizards of the Coast? Like, all out, across the board. So here's the thing. With the exception of monocolored decks, and with the exception of a few commanders, overwhelmingly, there's exceptions to everything, but ladies and gentlemen, overwhelmingly, there is no reason not to run Command Tower in your deck, your commander deck. It is tap for one color of any mana that you use in your deck. There's no restriction. It doesn't come into play tapped. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take anything back. It is a land that produces mana of any color that you are playing with. Therefore, with, of course, those rare exceptions, you need this card, or not you need, but you should be running. There's no reason, if you have it in front of you, not to put it in to your commander deck, correct? Therefore, you now are no longer constructing 100 cards. You are constructing 99 plus a Command Tower, because you always run Command Tower. Now let's say that they continue to create cards like Command Tower for Commander, the must runs, the things where you absolutely, you really need to do this, and they have a lot that are not quite as must include as Command Tower, but they're getting there. And then it's 98 cards, and then 97, and then eventually you reach a point where you say, oh, you want to play Commander? Sure, well, here's the 46 cards that were all created just for Commander that are absolute must runs. The fun and the strategy and the process of digging through lists, of reading these tens of thousands of cards that were never made for Commander, it's the difference between finding cards that are great in Commander or designing a card that will be guaranteed to be great in Commander. And I will always choose that this should be a format where we find the cards. I don't think they should make cards exclusively for Commander. Print it in Standard if you want it. Print it in Standard. That's my thought, and I feel very strongly about that. I feel so that then, okay, cards like Command Tower diminish Commander. I believe that very, very much.
So what about a card, I think this is what Nate just said, what about a card like Sol Ring?
Well, Sol Ring was
should
not...
Should that be banned in... But should it be banned in Commander?
Question.
Because I don't know any Commander decks that don't run it.
Good question.
Unless it's specifically not running artifacts, but yeah, that's a corner case. I think 99% of Commander decks run a Sol Ring.
Right, right. Well, I personally don't care. Sol Ring is a real Magic card. It was printed in a real set, and if the Commander Council, if the EDH Council, finds it to be something that should be banned, I will accept their judgment on that. What bothers me is them designing every year 50 or so brand new, exclusive for Commander cards that are meant to be excellent in Commander. commander, and now we don't need regular magic cards as much bit by bit. They're trying to engineer fun. They're creating cards that encourage politics. Excuse me, but politics is one of the most fun things about Commander for most people. And as soon as mom and dad come in the room and say, I've got an idea for a game that's going to be fun, it's a game that requires all the things that make these other games fun to happen, that sucks all the fun out of the room. All the tempt with immortality, blah, 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 blah. You know, like you are trying to force the fun. The politics will happen with or without those cards. I don't like mom and dad trying to force me to have fun.
So Max to Funator from the EDH subreddit.
I have strong opinions.
He asked, he'd like to know, I'd like to know what he feels is the perfect size for a game of EDH and how he feels the rules committee is doing with managing the game, or if he feels that Wizards could do a better job.
I'm going to have to say the rules committee is who I'm going to vote for each time. And I do not like that Wizards went over their head and said, these planeswalkers can be commanders. And then I read the rules committee and they're like, oh, well, it looks like these planeswalkers can be. It's like, wait a minute. The rules committee ceded power there. The rules committee should have stood up and said, we did not say that they could be commanders and Wizards of the Coast cannot do that. We do not a true game of commander. You don't use those planeswalkers as commanders until we say so. They're like a union losing power to the company in that.
Did the RC roll or did the RC cooperate with them?
They cooperated, which I disagree with. You don't cooperate with management.
I read that they cooperated.
Oh, really?
It wasn't. Yeah. I read there was a
that they worked together.
A conversation that they worked together to develop it.
Oh, really? I did not know that. I read a thing and it sounded, I read their response to the product and it sounded like they were saying, oh, looks like we've got this now, so... Oh, okay. Well, then I'm happy to be wrong on that. I still don't think planeswalkers should be commanders, but I'm a grumpy old man, you know, so...
I would have preferred them to do it like they've done with the Origins commanders with the flip guys. I think
that was
an interesting and innovative design, and that's a real magic card, as you say.
Yeah, I agree completely.
My only criticism of those Origins ones is they weren't too coloured. Now, I understand from a Vorthos perspective why they're not too coloured, but then design some too coloured ones.
So, Professor, do you think that the annual Commander product is in fact bad for the format?
I do personally feel this, but it is largely because of them creating the new cards. If the annual Commander product did not have new cards created for it, or quite so many, I would not have quite the problem I have with it. I was, however, more of a fan of, say, the Commander's Arsenal, which was a supply of cards that you could build from, cards that Commander players would want. They were made blingy bling blinged and foily, but there was no pre-done deck. And so if every year, instead of five brand new pre-constructed commander decks, there was, say, one, but printed so that you could buy it at $30, collection of reprints that they don't like. So let's say they don't want to reprint Sol Ring and Standard or whatever, but they do want it, or whatever the card is, Loyal Retainers and something. So it's a good way to reprint for Commander without putting it in Standard. I liked that toolkit sort of arsenal. I don't like that they only made four per store sort of thing. That I disagree with strongly, but I did kind of prefer, I like the build it yourself. I like the, come on, sit down and let's build it yourself. Magic's about deck building and all these pre-constructed decks are taking that away. And people are just like, oh, I just bought this deck and here you go. I've got this deck now. And it's like, well, what about building your own deck? You know?
Do you believe that those pre-constructed decks are bringing people into the format?
Yes, I do. And that's a good thing about it. And I don't, like I said, my real issue, my only concrete issue is I personally, and I know I'm in the minority, and I know I'm a cranky old crackpot on this, and I invite everyone to say I disagree with him on this. I love these cards. Josh Lee Kwai told me to STFU over me complaining about the Made for Commander cards, jokingly, you know, like, but I don't like the Made for Commander cards. That's why I don't like the product. Now, if they were making those pre-constructed decks for Commander and there was no, and it was just reprints, 100% reprints, I'd have probably very little problem with them. Now, I still recommend people check them out because they're a great way. I mean, even just putting together your own Commander deck from scratch can run like $100, even if it's like my kooky, incredibly suboptimal Anowin the Rune Sage Commander deck. And so to go out and for $25 to $30 on Amazon, get, you know, one of those decks which has a solid mana base in there, at least for starting, and can be upgraded. I think that's a great thing, and I do think they bring new players in, and I'm not opposed to that one bit. I just don't like them making things like Command Tower. And the fact that they make like 54 of them, it's not even like, okay, guys, this year we got three cool new made for Commander cards. It's like, this year we got 54 of them, and next year there's another 54, and in a couple years there'll be hundreds and hundreds of these kooky made for Commander cards that just diminish you putting in real Magic cards more and more with each printing. And that's what bothers me, is I fear that there's less and less reason to dive into the real Magic cards, the original Magic cards. And it's just like, oh, these made for Commander cards just do everything you would want. You know, they just do everything you would want. Right, right.
And so other than Command Tower, which is a card which I agree, if you're running anything other than monocolored, why would you not have that card in a deck? Which of the pre-made Magic cards are for Commander in the three sort of sets we've had are sort of the prime offenders? Most of them I've seen are not used regularly in decks, in decks that I play against or with. They're more sort of amusing things. There's a couple of standouts, I guess, like Containment Priest is
That's a good one. What about things like the Ancient Aesthetic and Aven Tactician guy, Alluro and Derevi, right? Or not? Derevi. It's late here.
Derevi. Have lots of people say it in lots of different ways.
Yes. So there's an example of they've made some commanders in colors that were hard to get, and so it's like, okay, so people, one of the, you know. Again, I understand I'm in the minority on this. You wanted me to sit down and scour over all the made for Commander cards to come up with what I think the worst offenders are. My concern is little by little things like the Command Tower coming into every deck needs to run this, and the Commander's Sphere, why not? You know, right? Is there any reason I shouldn't have that Commander's Sphere in there?
Sphere just replaced everyone's Darksteel Ingots, though. People were already running that in every deck, weren't they?
But now I can have Darksteel Ingot and the Commander's Sphere. Again, I just don't see the need for it, and I see potential harm. Maybe there aren't a lot of cards right now, but as they continue, they need to do 54 a year now. They will be doing the Commander's, Commander precons every year because they're so incredibly profitable. I don't know if they've officially said it, but I've certainly heard unofficially that this is a yearly product every year. They need to think of new.
It's official.
It's official. Okay. So every year they need to think of what? 5, 10. They need to think of 10 brand new designed for commanders every year. And then they start doing things like, well, this one does things when he's in the command zone, eh? And this one, well, gosh, we never had 4-color commanders, and I can't really make that for a deck. Or gosh, I can't, you know, it's very hard to find these color combinations. I loved when certain color combinations were so hard to find that you went with a commander that maybe isn't so great, but you're making it work. I'm just going to always be of the camp of I'd rather make it work in commander than have it made to be, oh, and here we go, it's the perfect Grixis commander, it's just amazing, and wow, and there's two of them now. And so if you're playing, you know, Grixis in commander, gosh, these are going to be top of the list every time, and a couple of them are, one of them is possibly, you know, headed for, you know, maybe being ban worthy, I've heard some people say, and if not, that just shows the power level. So forget about all those fun, colorful, goofy ones that we used in the past, because now we're just making the perfect commanders and the perfect commander cards. And that's just kind of why I'm going to be the guy who doesn't endorse it. I feel there needs to be one conscientious objector to this stuff, and it's going to be I need to.
Get a white feather on that, man.
I am the senator that, when everyone in the House of Congress is voting yes to war, is the one that votes no, because he says there has to be one person who voted no. And even though I agree we should go to war, the history books need to show it wasn't a unanimous vote to war. It's important. So, I will be that for the Commander pre-constructed products. I'm going to say my vote is for no on made for Commander only cards. I'm not a fan.
Okay, interestingly, right? So when I initially made that point we just discussed, I hadn't even considered the actual commanders themselves. I thought about the other cards that were in those precons that were in the M99, like Witch Attempt for Immortalities. So on the next point you made, where you said, oh, we would get perfect commanders for their colours, and then that makes sort of certain colour playstyles quite linear, if I'm interpreting what you're saying.
Yes, that's my objection.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so I think that happens already in certain colours anyway. Is it being the primary one? So the two main offenders for that be Joyra and probably Niv-Mizzet, the last Niv-Mizzet, which are both the only really two quote-unquote viable sort of competitive, your meta gets quite a competitive edge on it, commanders for those colors, and those decks are very linear as well. So would a new injection of two or three new Izzet commanders specifically designed for commander, would that not invigorate those colors, energize them, get more people playing in that sphere?
But let me ask you this question, knowing about commander, why can those not be printed into booster packs like every other card? Why can Wizards of the Coast not say, hey, we're paying attention to Commander. It's a big moneymaker for us. It's a thing that's very popular. We definitely want to support it. And they are already saying to themselves, you know, in some sloppy attempts, but nonetheless, we want to have cards in sets that are going to be appealing to Commander players first and foremost. So why can't they say, you know, something that we've heard we need are a couple more Izzet commanders that break with that linear build. And my thing is why do they need to be in the pre-con only? Why can't they just be in the set?
Would you not be asking then for R&D, though, to essentially do linear development? Because they are going to do Commander product every year. We know that.
Right.
But you'd be asking them to do linear development between what they're doing in, well, I guess it would have been Battle for Zendikar's coming up, isn't it? And what they're planning for doing for Commander product, and they work on totally different timescales, don't they? So the set for BFZ is being developed a good year or so before they're considering Commander 2015, and you're not talking about different design teams cross working. I don't know how Wizards set up. Sorry, yes, Blake, I know. I don't know how Wizards set up is done and how they would logistically do that kind of development. Is there a space in Battle for Zendikar for a couple of Izzet commanders, a couple of red blue things? Surely a more elegant way to do it would say, right, we're going to do it for all the off color guild pairings, and it will give us a chance to explore a design space around the command zone. And it will allow us to do it in one sort of bulk product that everyone has access to. They don't have to spend loads of money ripping packs if they're not into that. If they're like me and just play Commander, I don't have to now go and buy a ton of boxes or packs of Battle for Zendikar. I can just go, right, I'm going to buy one box of each of the pre-cons. I automatically pull apart those pre-con decks when I do it because I don't need them to get into it. I'm already into it. And then it's done. It's there, and they can design it in that space rather than mixing it into standard. You pull in standard and modern and draft considerations into those other things, which actually then pollutes the purity of their design. I don't know if I'm making myself very clear here.
Oh, no. I absolutely see the argument that you're making. I simply don't agree with the Made for Commander product. I see what you're saying. I hate
the Revy Imperial Tactician, by the way. I hate that card so much.
I actually don't. I just don't like...
I can't stand it.
I just don't like... Actually, I do hate that one. you know, I'm not going to lie to you, but that's not my point. I don't want it to be that, like, the reason that I'm against this is that I hate Imperial Tactician Derevi. That's not what my basis is.
No, sorry, that was a side
comment. No,
sorry.
Yeah. It's, you know, you're right in what you say, or rather, I should say, what you say has absolute merit. I guess I just am coming from a very different position. I view, you know, you're also describing them not having constraints. And I think that's, again, something that I disagree on, because I think constraints are good. I think constraints make you have to work for things. I think that when you say, oh, hey, we can just make whatever we want because it's not actually going into standard, that's where you get crazy stuff that ends up breaking things in a bad, unfun way that needs to be addressed. Because or in a way that then waters it down. I think, well, you know, we also have to make this, like, you know, be viable in standard and draft and stuff. And those are the cards I want to play with. I prefer that. I don't like all of these little, gosh, people say it's really hard to get the mana colors they want for their three color decks. Let's make an artifact that, you know, is they can just put in for, you know, the proper mana, and it won't be like, you know, a soul ring. It'll be three or whatever, but let's fix this problem that people are I like those problems. I want to fix them myself. I don't want R&D fixing that problem for me. I want to fix that problem. And again, you know, it's also that I feel that there needs to be, I feel that there needs to always be voices of dissent. I feel that there needs to be someone questioning. I feel that the insane, I take that word back, not insane, that the incredibly emotional enthusiasm for these pre-con products is a great thing. Yeah, but it's also something that discourages people saying, wait a minute, is this really, like, it's like when you're getting every wish granted. And I hesitate at that. I don't know that I want every wish granted. Sometimes that longing makes what we have even sweeter, you know, and that's just how I feel. And especially the numbers, gosh, they're just making so many of them. If it was just like, oh, hey, we make one unique commander for each of the five precons each year, but no, they do two of them each year. And so there's 10 a year. It's just so much over the years that's going to end up coming in. I don't know. You know, it's just, I just question it. I really, you know, and I use the command tower as my example of what happens when now there's two and three and more commanders like those and more things like that. And then they, you know, and it's like, hey, we could never make a planeswalker who did this in standard, but let's make it for commander. And then now everybody's got to, if you're in blue, you got to run that planeswalker. And that's what I'm not a fan of. And that's my objection. And so it's a conscientious objector.
That's an excellent point, and let's leave it there. Clearly, Professor, we're going to have you on again, because we've only made it about halfway through our questions and our listeners' questions, and this has been so much fun. I'm sorry that the Commander products bring you such angst. It's
consternation, only consternation. I cluck my tongue a little bit. I just cluck my tongue.
Well, in 10 years, you'll be looking at 550 new cards that are just Commander.
That's consternation.
Yeah, yeah. Before we get to the outro, you had told me that you had a little bit of a...
Yeah, I got a little goodbye song for y'all tonight.
A little goodbye. Yeah, a little surprise for the guys here. So,
yeah.
Do you want to wait for the proper outro, or do you want to do it now?
I'm going to do it right now.
All right.
This is as we draw to a close. I want to thank you all for having me here tonight. We've had some talk, we've had some laughs, and I got a little song for you. Ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. I've been commandering all night. I've been a commandering all day. When I want some magic, commandering's the only way to play. Games going on for hours. We all got $1,000 decks. Then some kid shows up with a precon, and all of us get wrecked. Oh no, it's not like Dynet Leaders. Commander's here to stay. And when I want some magic, commandering's the only way to play. The only way to play.
All right. Is it okay if I add a banjo and some harmony behind
that?
Yeah,
please right. Do. Just make sure it doesn't drone out my lyrics there.
That is excellent, Professor. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's the best gift ever.
The gift of song. I love it.
So, Professor, is there any way that you want people to get hold of you? We're going to include a link to the YouTube channel.
YouTube's the best way. I'm also streaming magic on Twitch, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook. And you can get those appropriate things either by clicking on the links that I'm sure will be helpfully provided in the description thing part.
They're already there.
They're already there. But if you don't want to, like, scroll down half an inch and just click on them, and you really want to find them, and you're like, I would really like to like him on Facebook or follow him on Twitter so that I could interact with him, I guess I could tell you, like, the whole Twitter address. But you could just, like, go to Google and type Twitter Talarian Community College, and it'll take you there. Like, you can go to www.facebook.com/Talarian Community College, but I don't think anyone does that. So, but just click on the links. Just scroll down and click on the links. Come on, guys.
Right. They should just go and click on the links.
They might be Gryffindors.
They might be.
I didn't see any. Other than Hermione, who would have been really fine in Ravenclaw, I think. I didn't see any real studious academic work going on in Gryffindor at all.
She just didn't.
Half those guys barely seem to know how to cast a spell. Is all I'm saying.
They're the jocks of Hogwarts, basically.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I would think that a Gryffindor is more likely to beat me up and take my lunch money than a Slytherin, who would probably want me to invest it in a stock so we could get rich.
Look, the Gryffindors got to eat.
Yeah.
And they don't have money of their own. Well, because their parents didn't invest in the stock market.
The Gryffindors represent the police state.
Our theme song was created for the podcast by Dave Burgess. Yes. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. You can find more art from Mr. Picto by going to mrpicto.co.uk. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank. And you can reach us by going to our website at, and just like the professor, I will put the preceding www.commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. On YouTube. We have a brand new YouTube channel, Professor.
Wow.
Nate got tired of not seeing us on YouTube about 3 weeks ago. And you can find us by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. We're on Reddit as Commander and MTG. On Facebook, we're Commander and MTG Podcast. And on Twitter, we're at Commander and MTG. Individually on Twitter, I'm at KetJack.
I'm at Copain26.
And I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And we have had the best time tonight, Professor. Thank you so much for taking so much time. And it is a lot of time out of your schedule. I know tomorrow you have to brave floods.
Yes.
Well, angry townsfolk.
No, we just hired a new janitor. He's going to unclog the toilets finally.
Yeah, but he's not really that reliable. Yeah, for kaijudo cards, that's true.
Watch out, I'll send you
so many kaijudo cards at the college. Because
no one's taking them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get paid in command towers, please. I need them for all of my decks.
Ah, oh, that's God. Great.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, horsey. Come on. Hey, horsey. Come on. That's a good boy. Who's a good boy there? Who's a good horse there? Who's a good horse? Do you want a carrot and some sugar? Yeah, and then I'd be petting its mane, and I'd be like, you're so pretty. You're the prettiest horse.
Commanderin.
Slytherin, we're not as bad as you think. Slytherin.